The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome. Welcome, everybody. And Happy New Year. It's nice to be starting the year off in this way, the first Monday of 2022. With sitting together, practicing together. Thank you. Thank you for this. So, maybe I'll just say, I said this at the beginning of the guided meditation, that a good idea to keep an eye on the calendar. We may be at the last minute to be making some changes on whether individuals will be here at IMC for these Monday nights. For tonight and next week, I'm just here by myself. But on the 17th, technically right now, it'll be open for people to attend, but that might change depending how the COVID goes and this Omicron variant. So just keep an eye on the calendar. Okay, so back to the Dharma here that we're talking about. Maybe COVID is just as much the Dharma as anything else, but just to say a few words about New Year's, right? It's that time of year when we make New Year's resolutions. I didn't know this, that there's even a technical term for this. It's called the fresh start effect, that people tend to want to make big changes in their lives and have a fresh start at particular times. Obvious ones is the new year. But, you know, I'll start on Monday, right, is kind of a famous thing that we hear all the time when we have these good habits we want to start. We often think, okay, I'll start on Monday. So fresh start at the beginning of the week or beginning of the month or after our birthday, after Labor Day. And for me, there are some things I like to do. And I'm thinking that the Chinese New Year, which this year is February 1st, I think, yeah, I'm maybe we'll start some new habits I'd like to incorporate or embed more deeply or something into my life. But perhaps you've already started with some New Year's resolutions. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about this and how in some ways some of the Buddhist teachings have things that can support us, as well as modern psychology, and how there's a kind of a meeting of these two. But I'm influenced by this YouTube video. It's had a tremendous number of views. I don't know how many. More than 75 million views. And it's about these squirrels who have this real determination, this tenacity, this perseverance. And it's this video by Mark Rober, a former NASA scientist and Apple employee. I think he lives here on the peninsula or in the South Bay or something like that. And the story is that he had a bird feeder, and that squirrels found a way to get to the bird food despite it being squirrel-proof bird feeder. And so he decides to have some fun with them, I guess. And he built a 8-part ninja obstacle course that these poor little squirrels have to go through to get to food that they wanted. And so this video is about that. So we might have this idea that like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to start something new and I wish I had what I'm calling this squirrel determination. You know, like if you've ever seen bird feeders and squirrels trying to get to bird feeders in your own house, in your own yard, then you know what I'm talking about. This determination, they find a way. And maybe I'll say that Mark Rober isn't the only one that has noticed this, but there's last year at the end of 2020, December 31st, 2020, Rosemary Traumer, who's this wonderful, beautiful poet, and she publishes a poem every day online. And for New Year's Eve last year, she published this poem that's called Again, Again. And it goes like this. On a day when the world asks too much of me and I don't know how to give it, I think of squirrels at the feeder when I was a girl. Dad hung the feeder on a squirrel-proof wire. Dad set the feeder on a squirrel-proof pole. Squirrels found a way. Surely there's some squirrel in me, some chattering tenacity, some bushy-tailed resolve. If I can't be courageous and brave, then let me at least be stubborn. Surely inside this aching heart is a scamperer willing to try again, to try again, to meet disappointment and failure and exhaustion and try again, again. So Rosemary Traumer, she also is maybe inspired by these squirrels. And somehow we might have this idea that if only we could be like that, just, you know, have this tenacity, or we need it, this willpower, this determination, this stubbornness to make these changes in our lives that we want to make happen. But making change is difficult. For example, if you wanted to have a meditation practice, have a more regular meditation practice, it's not so easy. I'm sure we've all have noticed this. I don't know anybody in which it was just easy from the very beginning. Well, maybe I do know one person, but for the vast majority of us, it's not so easy. And just making changes, part of the reason why it's difficult is because we have to overcome some of our deep-rooted instincts. That is our tendency to want instant gratification. This tends to work against our long-term goals and our change objectives that we might have. Also, humans have this tendency to be forgetful, that sometimes we don't remember, oh yeah, I was supposed to do that. I was going to meditate every morning, first thing in the morning, and here it is already lunchtime, and I'm only now remembering. Or it's just natural. Humans also have this tendency to take the path of least resistance. And it takes energy and effort to modify our patterns, to make changes in our behaviors or make changes in our thought patterns. Anything new that we want to do, it takes energy. And lastly, one other reason why some of the making changes may be difficult is that our social networks, the people that we spend time with in our personal life and our professional lives, may not have been constructed with change in mind. That is, there might be a certain external pressure for us to stay the same and not change. So there's lots of reasons why change is difficult. And the Buddha, I believe, recognized this, and he pointed to this quality of determination, perseverance, tenacity, resolve, which in Pali is called adhitana. And it's this sticking with things, even when it is difficult. So a certain amount of stick-to-itiveness. But maybe it's more like this gentle and persistent wind that keeps blowing and that we feel at our back that's encouraging us to take the next step, however small it might be, but not to give up, but to take the next step, to try again, again. And to be sure, for some people, being steadfast is one of their strengths. And the edge of their practice may be something a little bit different. Maybe for them, it's to not push at doing the same thing. This perseverance, maybe not push it to the point of drudgery, or to not cut oneself off from others because they're so focused on finishing a task. There's a kind of like go away, don't disturb me, I have something I have to do here. Or maybe they to choose the edge of their practice maybe is to choose those endeavors, those changes, those habits that will make the most difference in their lives and be the most enriching, nourishing, and supportive. So resolve, adhitana, is one of the paramis, and I talked about this, I gave a talk about it in November. And so I'm going to talk about something different here, but it's the similar idea, this, if we want to start a meditation practice, for example, because it's New Year's, what are some things that we can do? We recognize that there's this, what I'm calling squirrel determination. Those squirrels who want to get the food in the bird feeder, they find a way. But humans aren't like that. Let's say that sometimes we are that way, but we're not all that, we're not that way every time for everything we want to do. Otherwise, there wouldn't be this, I don't know how big this diet industry is or the exercise industry is, but it's big, right? How many books and gyms and YouTube videos probably too. Apps, all these things, right? It's a huge effort to try to support people to pursue their habits, these changes that they'd like to make. So what can our practice do to support us? What can the Buddhist teachings do to support us? And also, how can we use what we learn to help support our Buddhist practice? So one thing I'd like to point out is adhitana is not the same as stubbornness. Even in that poem, Rosemary Traumer describes the squirrels as being stubborn. And stubbornness has this quality of this unyielding, just no matter what, just going straight forward. Even if it might be harmful or deleterious or not the wise thing to do, but doing it anyway. So it has this really limited view. If I'm just going to do this, get out of my way, kind of a thing. And that's not what adhitana, resolve, perseverance, determination, is about in the Buddhist tradition. As a parami, it's linked to freedom. It's linked to efforts that have a quality of warmth and care and nourishing for ourselves and for others and support for ourselves and others. But it's like an integral part of moving towards greater freedom. Whereas stubbornness has this way in which we might feel stuck. Like it's like, no, I have to do this, even though all the pointers might be that it's not the wise thing to do or the best thing to do. So it's not this type of tunnel vision, nor is adhitana this way in which we have to prove ourselves, either to ourselves or to others. It's not that we're just striving to become the best just so that we can be the best. We're striving to become the best version of ourselves so that our best wisdom can be offered to the world. It can be and play a role in everything we do. And it's also, adhitana, this resolve, is also not about focusing on everything that's in our way with the barriers, with the difficulties that we have in our lives, the restrictions that we might have in our lives. So it's not about trying to obliterate anything that gets in the way, because that type of thinking, we tend to fall into, well, if only X didn't happen, or I should have done X. It's a way in which that type of thinking can have a real looping quality and doesn't really go forward. And of course, takes a lot of our energy. So I just wanted to clarify a little bit about what adhitana, resolve, isn't. So what are some ways in which we can use Laditana resolve that recognizes our humanity, that we have limited energy. Some of us have more energy than others, but we all just have to work with whatever energy we have. And how can we recognize that this, how Aditana can be a part of our life instead of something that is a, we feel like has to be the foundation for every change that we make? And what I mean by this is often the people who we think of as having the most self-control or the most willpower, maybe those people who talk about how much they meditate every day or how they haven't missed a day of meditation for X amount of time or how many retreats they've done or something like that, we might be thinking that they are exercising willpower, you know, to make themselves do it, or self-control to make themselves do it. But actually, willpower is overrated. That humans, we only have so much of it, and it can't sustain us through to help us with some of these really important qualities to have the best version of our lives. And those people who we think are, or it appears that they are exercising a lot of willpower or self-control, is most likely that they've built habits, they've built routines, they've built systems, they've created conditions to support what these habits, for example, meditating every day. So they've done this way in which these good behaviors are more on autopilot than requiring willpower. And that's part of the secret here. So to be sure, it takes energy to start to do anything new and different and to have some perseverance. So Aditana, resolve, is an integral part of Buddhist practice, integral part of any time we want to make a change. But it's not the same as relying on it, because it's not always available. Sometimes we don't feel well. Sometimes we have emotional difficulties. We just don't have the energy towards some of these new behaviors we're trying to develop. Sometimes we have physical difficulties. We don't have the energy or the resolve. Maybe we get disappointed. There's countless reasons why we can't just believe the commercial, the Nike commercial, which must have been a pretty successful commercial, that all of us, or many of us, know it, this idea of just do it. I think there's a part of us that thinks that, oh yeah, I should be able to just do it like everybody else is. But chances are that they have created the conditions in which these new good behaviors, it makes it more likely that they will happen. So to change our behavior, to do a new habit, to fulfill our New Year's resolutions, to start a meditation practice, we can focus on maybe systems or processes or conditions rather than specific goals. To be sure, it's helpful to have goals, and it's helpful to have specific goals. But goals are about the results we want to achieve. For example, having a regular meditation practice. Whereas systems are about the processes that lead to those results. And when we're stressed, not feeling well, don't have a lot of energy, these systems, these processes can support us and can help us still make movement towards these outcomes we would like, these goals, without relying on willpower, without relying on a tremendous amount of resolve. So to change our behavior, we can focus on conditions, processes, systems. And the Buddha, to be sure, taught a lot about this too. So when, maybe I'll just say this, of course there's a big emphasis on cause and effect, the consequences of our actions. I recently gave a Dharma talk on this topic also. And we might say that this is one of the key teachings of the Buddha, that everything is a consequence of something else. It's just causes and conditions unfolding. Everything is. There isn't anything that arises without some underlying cause or condition. We know this. It's obvious. But maybe kind of the Buddhist teachings is just how thorough that is and how there are no exceptions. And it's until we have kind of this deep insight, this deep type of knowing can be really transformative. But can we, knowing, having this information, can we use it to support our changing our behaviors or starting a meditation practice? So one thing that psychologists use this expression, temptation bundling, that is to link something alluring, attractive, something that we want, with something that takes a lot of energy, maybe we're dreading doing, don't really want, something we should do, to link these two things together. An obvious example is some people listen to, it's so common now, right, podcasts or books on tape with Audible, to be listening to have this something that's really engaging and fascinating and interesting, really enjoyable for you, and to give yourself the rule, I'm only going to listen to this while I'm out for a walk, while I'm at the gym, while I'm doing cleaning the kitchen, or you know, something that we feel like we should do, but we're finding a little bit resistance to doing it. We link it with something that we want to do and is fun. So this idea of temptation bundling. So how can we take this idea of temptation bundling and have it to work with our starting a meditation practice? One thing is maybe to reflect on, what does the heart love? Is there a part of practice that makes your heart sing? And is there a way that in a way that makes sense that this can be linked with meditation practice? Maybe it's something really small, but it's kind of delightful or meaningful or touches you in some way. And to have that as part of the meditation practice or as a support for practice. Or so bundling something that we feel like we should do, we want to do, but have some resistance or difficulties. Can we link that with something that is delightful? Here are some examples. Maybe there's something in our heart and our mind that wants to have express appreciation, love, gratitude. A way to tap into those individuals who support us or to feel appreciative that we have a practice or whatever it might be. So maybe there's a little bit of, we start our meditation practice with gratitude. Or maybe even if that feels like, okay, that's a little bit too much work, maybe there's just this devotional aspect that doesn't have words. Maybe there's something about, I know some people that like to bow before they sit. Some people bow just from the waist. Some do bow on the floor. But there's something about this act of bowing that can help us get out of our own way. Or maybe chanting. I know people who chant the Metta Sutta. When they first sit down, this is their practice. They chant it out loud or they chant it in their minds. I certainly have done this, chanted the Metta Sutta. I found it uplifting and also a way of kind of get out of my own way. Or maybe there's reading a sutta passage. Maybe there's some passages that are really uplifting and meaningful for you. The Dhammapada, Terigata, Teragata, some passages from the Suttanapatta. So maybe to say I'm going to do this practice, reading sutta passages, chanting, bowing before I sit, and then I'm going to sit for I don't know how long. You know, some people say you should sit 15 minutes, and some people say, well, when you're first starting, just get into the meditation posture. Just get into the posture for 60 seconds. So, temptation bundling. Maybe there's this part of your practice that you feel fascinated by or curious by, and there's a part of you that likes to learn. So, like, okay, I'm only going to read these Dharma books after I've sat. So I have to sit first, so that partly so that the Dharma doesn't become just some analytical thing, but that it becomes an embodied practice. Maybe you could say, you know what, I'm only going to read this book after I've done a sit. Or maybe there's something about ritual that is comforting, soothing, maybe not in a way that you can explain to anybody else, but maybe there's something about ringing the bell, having a bell, especially these days when we're on Zoom, so often the bells are not satisfying, right? Zoom with its noise cancellation doesn't feel as good as, especially this bell here is really beautiful at IMC. I think it's beautiful. Ringing a bell, lighting a candle, lighting incense. Maybe there's something, some gesture, some activity that makes your heart sing that can be linked to your meditation practice. So this is one way, this is one support to start a meditation practice. And then maybe I'll mention this. This isn't exactly temptation bundling, but it is highlighting the link between having a settled mind, having a collected mind, and having the heart sing. And that is, it's called the gladness pentad. And we see this showing up in all kinds of suttas in so many different ways. And it starts, gladness pentad, as the name suggests, has five elements and starts with gladness. Gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration. Maybe that last word I could say samadhi. So rather than concentration, we can think of it more of a settledness or a collectedness, non-distraction. Gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, samadhi. There's a real connection in allowing our heart to sing, to have this happiness, have this joy, this gladness, that allows there to be some settling. It can be a real support for meditation. So psychologists are using this expression, temptation bundling, as a way to help us start new habits, New Year's resolutions. And as a support for a meditation practice, we can think of this idea of temptation bundling that I just described, but also this recognition of the gladness pentad. What is it that supports gladness? And in the Buddhist teachings, this cascade goes naturally from gladness down to samadhi. So that's one support for our New Year's resolution. And next week, I'll talk about some more supports for New Year's resolutions or any time we're making resolutions to support our meditation practice. And maybe I will end with just an appreciation of practicing with others. Right now I'm alone in this room, but I see some of you on the chat for YouTube, and just for myself, how wonderful it is to practice together. Makes me glad. So, with a warm-hearted, happy new year, thank you.